He's the leader of the Global Anglican Communion, which includes some 80 million people in 160 countries. He's 104th to hold the office of Archbishop of Canterbury. And I'm delighted to say that Dr. Rowan Williams is with us on Sunday Breakfast this morning. Archbishop, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Of course, as I'm sure everybody knows by now, you're into your third day of the tour of the diocese, visiting and debating and speaking. What impressions will you take away of your trip so far, do you think?
Well, let me talk about three things, really. One is the enormous sense of pride in Derby and Derbyshire. When I arrived, the first thing that I went to was a discussion at the university, which brought out all the sort of diverse history of the area, the history of creativity and industry, the history of farming, the landscape itself. That was enormously stirring and very encouraging. Second thing was the discussion that I had yesterday with members of the farming community up at Blackwell at the farm centre there, getting some sense of the real pressures that hill farmers face in an area like this. And then, third and not least important, the great variety of the ways in which the church is engaged at grassroots level with communities, from the Derby City Mission that I opened on Friday afternoon through to the visit to Brampton, Chesterfield yesterday afternoon, seeing amazingly innovative work being done there on the streets.
Now, of course,
so lots to be grateful for there.
On Friday night, of course, making a difference at Pride Park Stadium, something that's been very, very much in the local news, as you can imagine at the moment, the future of local industry, in particular of Bombardier.
Indeed, yes. And, of course, a member of the panel on Friday was Colin Walton, who's chair of Bombardier. So I was made very much aware straight away of the deep anxieties that there are around that. And it does seem to me that we're looking for some real initiatives about manufacturing industry in this country, that we've heard the right noises being made. We're not yet seeing quite what's going to make a difference in that. And so I'm aware that it's something which is causing huge anxiety and distress to lots of people as they face job losses locally.
In fact, I think you are quoted in the Daily Telegraph as saying that Bombardier should have been awarded the contract, a way should have been found.
It would have been very good if a way could have been found. I don't know what the chances are of reviewing it now, but I do know what the cost is to communities like this because of experience similar to this when I was working in Wales 10 years ago and more.
What are the key things you'd hope to get across during your visit to Derbyshire?
I've been talking a bit about the need for confident communities, something that came up on Friday at the opening panel discussion with a number of local people. Confident communities where people feel, on the one hand, they can be proud of their community and also feel that their community looks after them. And that's something I've been seeing in practice in lots of settings. In Brampton yesterday, opening the new church centre there, that's an extraordinary bit of architecture, quite apart from anything else. It's a very innovative, very finely done craftsman-like piece of work, which offers a real facility to the community, allows groups to come and meet, provides a cafe service, all the rest of it. Something that a community can be proud of. It's designed on environmentally sound principles. It's been designed in real consultation with groups in the local community who are working hard to make that community a confident community where there's trust. So that's an example, I think, of what it means for a community to have confidence, to have things to be proud of.
Well, I'm sure it's one of the most enjoyable aspects of your work when you actually can come out to places and see what's happening, do a sort of little mini tour around.
It's wonderful.
We played a little clip earlier of you saying that you hadn't actually expected to spend so much time and energy on the church's internal wranglings and interfaith issues. But if you could just set your own agenda, what would you like to concentrate on as Archbishop of Canterbury?
When I first became Archbishop of Canterbury, I said the two things I really, really wanted to focus on were to do with what I called capturing the imagination of the British people. In other words, really innovative mission projects like the one I was talking about just now, getting out into the community more, and also trying to help people within the church get a better grasp of their faith, a more sort of intelligent, involved grasp of their faith. Theological education is where it sounds a bit dry put like that, but I think it's really just about people having the confidence to talk about what they believe. So, yes, I think that's happened a bit in the last 9 years or so. I think we have pushed the boat out a bit, but it would have been nice to have more energy for that and not be consumed all the time with firefighting.
But you can't be Archbishop of Canterbury without people voicing their opinions. Obviously, there seem to be those who see you perhaps as too much the scholar, the poet, the academic. And then there are those who see you as too outspoken, too political. I mean, as your own worst critic, do you feel you've got the balance right?
Depends which day of the week you ask me, really. I don't know. I think that all you can do in a job like this is pray hard, listen hard to what you think God is telling you, listen to people. And for me, that's been the most important part of the job, getting out and about on a weekend like this, getting out and about in East Kent, where I'm the local bishop and visit parishes most Sundays down there. And I think if you try to keep listening like that, you get some sense of what the real priorities are. You can work on that. Sometimes you get it right, sometimes wrong.
Now, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the newspapers this morning, but there is a rather mischievous, I should say, front-page story on the Mail on Sunday today. 2,000 years of Christianity jettisoned for politically correct common era. And the main headline, BBC turns its back on Year of Our Lord. It's actually been accused of absurd political correctness after dropping the terms BC and AD in case they offend non-Christians. I mean, obviously, you've always encompassed all religions. I mean, do you think this is a step too far, if it's true?
I must say, I rather regret the passage of BC and AD. It's what I grew up with, like most people in this country. It's a convention that just reminds us that, as a matter of fact, the way we date our years begins from what was believed to be the birth of Jesus Christ. But even if people are talking about CE and BCE, Christian era and before the Christian era and so forth, or the common era, even that does recognize implicitly that the birth of Jesus made a difference to history. That's where we date things from. So I'm not losing too much sleep over it. I'm happier. I more naturally, of course, use BC and AD. But there's still that acknowledgement. We can't pretend as a culture that that's not the anchorage point for our history.
Now, of course, there is much debate at the moment as to whether it's ethical to teach about religion in schools. Could I put you on the spot a little bit about something we looked at actually just early this morning on Sunday Breakfast, the argument about the teaching of creationism and intelligent design under the heading of science? Could you perhaps give us your take on that?
I've never been very happy about the idea that we should teach creationism as if it were science. I think people studying science should learn about creationism. It's something that many people believe. It's a major political and cultural thing, especially in the United States. But I don't think that it is on the same level as science. I don't believe that the biblical story intends to give scientific answers. It tells us what we need to know in order to know about God. It's not a scientific text, the book of Genesis. It tells us the beginnings of the human story, and it wraps that absolutely understandably in immensely powerful, poetic shorthand, as you might say. It's a shorthand, it's not a scientific description. And I think we don't do any service to the Bible or to God by pretending that it's a kind of scientific paper in a journal.
And might Christianity be as much at risk from its own extreme factions as it is from any secularists these days?
I think it's true of most religious communities that they have extremist ends, people who somehow can't see the wood for the trees, who are so preoccupied with defending the territory, they don't actually see what it's like to live in the territory. You know, people who are always saying we've got to protect our faith from this, that, and the other, rather than saying, well, we love living in this territory. We love being Christians. We love God. We're grateful to God. Because that's the attractive thing, and that's what eventually, I think, overcomes criticism. It's seeing people being at home with themselves, being at home with God, and working with him, being honest with him, with all the demands, all the costs that means in terms of acknowledging your failures. But being able to say to the world around, it's a good place to be, it's a truthful place to be. So the extremist who says, I've got to defend it, I've got to make sure every I is dotted and every T is crossed, isn't doing a great deal, I think, to keep the doors open to those who most need faith and hope.
Now, I know you'll be giving an address at Derby Cathedral a little later this morning. Would it be stealing thunder to ask its theme?
Of course it would, but as a special favour, I might tell you a little bit.
Oh, thank you.
I really want to talk a bit about commitment. We've got a reading from the New Testament this morning, which is really about people who don't want to make commitments. The people in Jesus' own time who couldn't make up their mind about him or about those around him. And Jesus is saying, those people who are kind of hovering around, not really wanting to take the risk of committing themselves, they're overtaken by the people who know how needy they are, who know what they need for their lives to get together and make sense. And all those people who are sort of deliberating and debating and trying to avoid risk are almost elbowed out of the way by the people who are hungry for life and hope and push past them. That's why Jesus says it's the in his own day, it's the collaborators with the Roman army, it's the prostitutes. They're the ones who get into the kingdom of heaven first.
Well, we ought to let you get back to your busy schedule now. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us on Sunday Breakfast here at BBC Radio Derby. Do enjoy the rest of your visit. Dr. Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury here at BBC Radio Derby.
Thank you very much.